Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started. You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go. Hour 2 and a Friday live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. Drew Brees is going to stop by here in a few minutes, I'm told. Alex Curry is joining me today. Joy Taylor, I think, is off until Monday. I'm looking at Drew Brees' records. We have a sheet here listed of all of Drew Brees' records. It's incredible. I mean, honestly, he must hold 50% of the NFL passing records. He holds everything. Most 300-yard games, most 400-yard games, most 3 TD games, most 4 TD games, most 5 TD games, most seasons leading the NFL in passing yards, the most career passing yards, the most completions, the most 5,000-yard seasons, the most seasons leading the NFL in touchdown passes, the most seasons leading the NFL in passing yards. And it's funny about passing yards because Drew isn't considered to have a huge arm. So, you know, there's a lot of 8 yards and 12 yards. It's not a lot of 50, 60 yards. It's incredible. Drew Brees is actually, for all young athletes out there, the Texas schools, he wasn't huge, kind of overlooked him, went to Purdue, then he goes to the Chargers, then the Chargers move off him, the Dolphins say no, then he goes to the Saints, he faced, you know, Katrina, it moved, kind of mobilized the team to move elsewhere. His career, between the injuries and all the things he had to face, the obstacles, And I've said this for years, if you work hard enough, you don't have to be the world's most talented person, but if you are really driven, really care, and you're really willful, you will find your kingmaker. He finally found Sean Payton. You'll find it eventually. Somebody will spot you, boy or girl, man or woman, somebody will spot you and say, listen, you're talented. Nobody's ever believed in you. I'm going to believe in you. And, you know, he finally... Sean Payton was young and talented, hadn't been given the head coaching job, so the Saints were awful. He didn't get to go to a great franchise. Sean Payton had to go to a franchise that was beaten down and start over. Would have been much easier going to the Green Bay Packers or the Pittsburgh Steelers. So Brees and Sean Payton both had that little chip. They had to keep proving to people who they were, and it's just remarkable what my staff usually does. My staff will give me a list of who's coming on, and then they'll put their accomplishments, and then they'll put the questions. The questions are usually way longer than the accomplishments. In Drew's case, I've got 6 pages of accomplishments, and I don't really need questions. I'll figure that out. 20 NFL seasons, Super Bowl champ. I've always said he's one of the 8 great quarterbacks of my life, and that's a unique club. I don't have, believe it or not, I don't have far than that. And that's how good my club is. What I care about, which is efficiency, pre-snap, all that stuff. He's one of my favorite players in the history of the league. Drew Brees is joining us. He'll probably blush and say, would you stop it already? God, give me a break on this stuff. All right, here we go. So, you know, it's funny. I'm looking at all your records. And I just said before you got here, I'm like, what doesn't he hold? You're not really a records guy. You're a win guy. You're not about the numbers and stuff. You're a win guy. But is there one stat, Drew, that you look at and you're like, I'm proud of that? That one means a lot to me.
Well, that's a tough question. I think the statistics that just show consistency over a long period of time, because I think that's what you strive for. I think that's what drove me. You know, each and every offseason and each and every season was, how can I get better? How can I continue to, you know, become more efficient? How can I be a better leader? And, you know, you just, man, even to the most minute details of how that might change your routine or your approach, you know, for each and every season. Because, you know, like coming off a season in 2011, you know, where we threw for 5,476 yards, right? Broke the all-time yardage mark. You have to kind of sit back and say, wow, there was a lot of things that had to fall into place in order to hit those numbers, you know. And Will we ever have a season like that again from a yardage perspective? Probably not. And so it's not like you come out the next season and say, all right, I'm trying to throw for more yards than I did the year before. It wasn't about that for me. It was just, how can I be more consistent? How can I be more efficient? How can I improve upon so many of the little things that just might result in one more win here, one more win there, to help us achieve the ultimate goal?
You know, it's interesting. Years ago, my first job out of college was in Vegas, and I was going through a fast food drive-thru years ago, and Andre Agassi was in front of me, and he had this big fancy car. And I'm thinking, didn't he just win like the U.S. Open? He's eating fast food at Taco Bell like me. But it was a long time ago. Okay, I'm an older guy, right? And then, And I remember talking to him about that. He goes, man, I burn so much. He goes, I'm eating all day. So you've played long enough where about halfway through your career, Drew, the nutrition thing became a real talking point. Or did you come out of Purdue and were you already into that stuff? Or did the longevity part, the diet part, halfway through your career? Because I hear about Russell Wilson now and I think, well, of course he does it because everybody does it now. They eat right. But go back to your early career and your late career. Was it different, all the efficiency stuff, the diet stuff, the nutrition stuff?
Yes, it became much more of a priority, I would say, right around year 15, I think, for me. Now, I wasn't eating fast food every day prior to that, you know, but I was probably a little more loose with certain things. And I think you just, listen, Father Time wins at some point, you know what I'm saying? And so you try to avoid that as long as you can and try to gain every edge possible, especially as you get older in your career. Because listen, the fact is it takes longer to recover from your training.
That's
it takes
right.
longer to recover after a game. And so the quicker you can get back onto the field playing at that high level, the greater edge that you have. And so that's when I think I began to really start paying attention to all the information about diet and just how important that was, and all the information about sleep and all the information about recovery. And then you really begin making that part of your routine, just like you would going to practice or going in the weight room or the actual work itself. The recovery became just as important or more important. And so I would definitely say that became a huge priority, especially over the last 5 years of my career.
You know, you probably helped more than any. You have a Steph Curry quality. Steph Curry's gotten guys drafted. I mean, Trae Young gets drafted because of Steph Curry. You were the guy that wasn't 6'4". And so I always think a lot of guys have said, well, he's kind of like Drew Brees. That's always the fallback. A couple years ago, they say he's going to be the next Drew Brees. And I was like, give me a break. There is no next Drew Brees. He's 1-on-1. Give me a break. But it makes me think. Who were you compared to the month before the draft? Who were you getting? Fran Tarkenton or something? I mean, who?
Yeah. So here's the irony. You know, if you would have asked me prior to me getting drafted, maybe kind of going up through high school and college, who I most maybe tried to emulate or thought that I was most similar to in regards to my playing style or who I was trying to be, I would have said Doug Flutie.
Wow.
Doug Flutie. And ironically, I get drafted to the San Diego Chargers in the second round. I guess who's starting? Doug Flutie. And so I can honestly say that Doug was so influential for me early in my career. He was such a great mentor. He was one of those guys who I really feel like did not get the credit he deserved as a player. And you know, hence his journey, right? He comes into the NFL, and yet so many question marks and doubts based on his size, right? He was 5'9" and a half, 5'10" maybe. So he has to go to Canada and just keeps winning, keeps balling, gets an opportunity to come back to the NFL, Buffalo Bills for a few years. Then he comes to the Chargers, and that's where I had a chance to spend 4 years with him. But Doug was doing things back then that nobody was doing.
I know.
Doug Flutie invented the back shoulder throw. Or at least certainly the term that we use in regards to back shoulder. Doug was doing that before anybody was talking about it. He doesn't get credit for that. But I'm telling you, I know I developed that skill from being with Doug Flutie. And that's a skill that carried me through my whole career. I don't have those records you just read off if it wasn't for Doug Flutie.
Isn't that?
Or the back shoulder throw. So that's just one small example of what Doug meant to me in my career, and how he was a real pioneer and he was a real trailblazer. And listen, it was an honor for me as I kind of went through my career. I remember when Russell Wilson came out in 2012, and I think there was a lot of comparisons starting to be made about him and me, really based on size, athleticism, you know, that kind of thing. And Russell even came out and said it, hey, Drew Brees is one of the guys I watched. And that was a big honor for me, thinking, man, I never thought that I'd reach a point in my career where I've got guys coming out saying, yeah, I'm emulating my game after him. Or, you know, this guy, because of his size and what he's been able to achieve, has now opened some doors for guys like me. But I take great pride in that. I'll be the first one to tell you that there were guys that came before me that were that, you know, were that influential for me.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I was saying before you came on, I said, everybody needs a kingmaker. And, you know, you were overlooked by a lot of people. You know, Nick Saban would be coaching in the NFL now if the team doctor had let Nick Saban have you. He would not be at Alabama. That's the football world would not look the same today. But then you find Sean Payton, and he's your kingmaker. You finally have a driven, aspirational, brilliant guy. Go back to the first time you met him. Where was the moment for you, Drew? Maybe you're driving home to your family. Maybe it's a practice where you thought, okay, I found my guy, that this is different, that you just knew. It may not have been a game, but you were sitting there thinking, God, I've worked my whole life for this. I found my guy that cares as much as I do, and he gets me. He appreciates me, gets me. Do you remember that moment?
Well, that was very quick. And honestly, it was probably one of the first meetings we ever had in person. When I was going through that process with Miami and New Orleans, when I came to visit the New Orleans Saints, I remember walking into our offensive staff room at the time, and it was just me and Sean. And he literally was drawing plays on the board, which basically was kind of a beginning of an offensive install. Like, hey, this is the kind of stuff we're going to do. This is the system I run. And just to begin to give me a preview of what that was. Well, he started drawing up all the plays that were my favorite plays from the San Diego Chargers. And I said, wow, you all run the same, you know, scheme or a lot of these same plays. And he said, no, I've never done these before, but I know you do them and you do them well. And we're building this thing around you. And I just kind of sat back in my chair and I thought, wow, you know, for a young first-time head coach coming from the Dallas Cowboy organization to the New Orleans Saints, which obviously was in disarray at the time, post-Katrina and a bit of the dysfunction that had taken place there for the previous, you know, 5-6 years. I thought he would be coming in with this Parcells, my way or the highway, like, this is my system, you're going to learn it, you're going to run it, you know. But it was very much a collaboration. It was very much him looking at me and saying, man, we're building this thing around you. We're going to do what you're great at. And for me, that's when I immediately felt like this is the match.
Oh, that's great. Hey, by the way, Drew is going to be part of the GM of the Lowe's home team. That's a good company, by the way. I go there a lot. A group of players, Lowe's associates, nonprofit organization coming together to give back and help make homes better for all in the communities around the country. Talk about it, Drew.
Yeah, so I'm GM of the Lowe's home team here in 2021. It's like, just like you said, a combination of players and Lowe's associates and profit organizations just make our communities better. Lowe's has been involved in a lot of really unique renovation projects, building projects, special projects around the country over the last few years. We were able to help them distribute over 1 million Christmas trees last year to families and communities. So really a great campaign and excited to be a part of it.
Well, you're a great storyteller. That means you're going to be a great broadcaster because that's mostly what it is. I couldn't be happier for you. An honor to watch you. You've always been great to me whenever we call. And I root for you and I can't wait. And I hope to talk soon, Drew.
Colin, thank you. You too.
You bet. All right. Drew Brees. Boy, that must have been a great moment with Sean Payton.
Incredible.
He thought Parcells was going to come in with this big offense. He goes, no, it's you. How respectful is that? That you're like, oh, you know the plays that work for me. He'd already watched all the Drew Brees film.
You immediately feel welcomed and wanted in an organization that's going to change your mindset, the way you approach the game. You could tell the connection was immediate. But Drew's just so humble. He's so good. He's a living legend. When you read that list of all of his accolades, it's incredible.
It is. But it is when he broke into the league like Brady, you could eat, you know, nobody talked about spending $1 million in your body. Even he admitted, mm-hmm. I mean, Drew's a pretty thoughtful guy. Even he admitted it wasn't until year 15 when like sleep became a topic. I was just talking to an NFL prospect. You cannot believe in the NFL how often sleep, it's not nutrition anymore. It is sleep.
Yep.
These teams and these players, they want them to get 9.5 hours a night. It's really amazing. That's first it was what you eat, mm-hmm. then it's you know, pliability. The buzzword now is it's sleep studies and sleep for all these prospects. So there you go.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
New isn't always better. Tom Brady doesn't like the new numbers available to players where they can change their numbers. He thinks it's dumb. Not everything that's new is good. And everybody's afraid to rip anything new because you'll be called old and grumpy old man. I've always thought the replay system should be unified through all sports.
Oh, yeah.
So you get a minute.
Mm-hmm.
In 1 minute, no matter the sport, if you can't see the discrepancy, then the play stands. When you're sitting there going back and forth for a blade of grass, that's not true officiating. We all know there's been championships won and lost, games won and lost, based on calls.
Oh, yeah.
You get a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you start overanalyzing it and going back and forth, that's not – I think it hurts momentum. If I've got momentum and we go to an 8-minute replay break, you're screwing me as an officiating crew. The crowd's all lathered up and they're loud, and now 8 minutes, the crowd dies. So I think you can. That's when you're getting in the way of things in sports that matter, like tempo. I mean, in the NBA, a team's dog tired. They have a short bench in the NBA playoffs, and you go to a 7-minute extended break. That's like two timeouts. So you get a minute. You can't figure it out. You can't see it clearly. Boom, play stands. It's like momentum matters in sports. Replay kills it all the time. You work a whole game to get a block, a dunk, a home run, a big hit in football. Ref stand in. You killed it. In a sporting event, you may get on one of those runs in a typical NFL game or NBA game twice a game. It may last. We've all watched a football game, and you're like, oh, the quarterback's in a groove. Quarterback's in a groove. Then you cool him down. You sit there for 7 minutes. It just drives me nuts. 1 minute, can't find it, done.
I like the idea.
Yeah, it's like I ask my kids, did you take that? I watch them for about 30 seconds. If for 30 seconds I can't figure out they're lying, they fooled me. Then we go on to the next thing. Alex for the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Well, Zach Wilson will likely be heading to New York as the newest member of the Jets next week. And he's been preparing not just to play in the NFL, but also how to handle the spotlight in the Big Apple. He's been reportedly reaching out to former Jets quarterbacks Chad Pennington, Josh McCown, and Mark Sanchez to talk about what it means to play for that organization and in that environment. And Colin, we talked about that yesterday. We talked about it today. It is a different beast playing in New York with the media, the spotlight that's on you. I think it's a good idea for him to go out and do his homework.
Listen, the media in New York is generally tough early, but very much defending you late. I mean, once they fell in love with Parcells, they pretty much defended him to the hilt. They can be tough early. Boston media is very favorable early, but then turns their back on everybody, even Ted Williams and Manny Ramirez, late.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what you have to do is curry favor early, and if you win, like Namath, you'll be on New York radio and TV as long as you want. They're tough early, but I think they're very even-handed and fair in New York media. Sam Darnold struggled, but right down to the end, people liked him. They knew he was a good kid. They got a bad set of circumstances. So they could have been much worse to Sam Darnold. And, you know, he was treated incredibly fairly by the fans in New York and the media.
A bit of advice I've given to a lot of young professional athletes, because I've covered almost every sport, is just be kind to the media. They're going to be kind back to you, and they're going to like you back.
Yeah.
It's easy.
Yeah.
Just give them what they want.
It's so much easier to be nice.
It's so much easier to be nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Tom Brady looks like he has a lot left in the tank, and as he gets ready for his 22nd year in the NFL, but eventually the Bucs will have to start thinking about their quarterback of the future, and general manager Jason Light isn't ruling out drafting one in if the situation is right this year. Take a listen.
You just want to make sure that you're not picking a quarterback just to pick a quarterback. You want everybody to be on board, and the guy's got to have the right mindset, and it's got to be obviously talented, can throw the ball, but he's got to be someone that we all feel comfortable with above the neck. So there's always positive to drafting a quarterback if all those things align.
The good news is they are essentially, as a team, the only team in the National Football League drafting for depth.
Yep.
They have no needs.
Mm-hmm.
The other reason you could draft a quarterback is that what a great advantage to sit behind Tom Brady for two years.
Like the best.
Yeah, and also a guy that has really good traits. It's not just about talent. So you could certainly make an argument.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the first round, there's going to be some interesting defensive line prospects, and it's hard to pass up on good pass rushers. But now that they have Shaq Barrett and JPP kind of sewn in, wouldn't be shocking.
And you have to remember, Tom's 43. He's going to be 44 when the season starts. He's beat Father Time up to this point. As we just heard Drew Brees say, Father Time eventually catches up. The good thing for Tom is he was on that nutrition sleep plan way before everybody else, so he's ahead of the curve. But he's getting to the point where your body is going to start to shut down.
Yep.
Why not have someone train behind you while you're still hot? All right. Moving on to Joel Embiid is having an incredible season. He's been putting up some of the best numbers of his career, averaging 30 points per game and shooting over 51% from the field. And when he was asked if he thinks he is the league MVP, he was very confident, saying, "There's no doubt. I've been dominant all season." Now, he has the second best odds on Fox Bet right now behind Jokic to an MVP. But I like that we have these top players right now kind of really making a case for themselves. We heard Steph Curry say he should be MVP the other day. So I don't know. Maybe it's because a lot of top guys are injured right now. But
I also think it's interesting that Giannis's numbers on the defensive end are better, but he's kind of been eliminated because we've seen that before.
Uh-huh.
It feels like Jokic is the guy that is really good. And there's a sympathy for him because in Denver, the mountain time zone, he's not coastal, he's not Midwest, he gets overlooked.
Yeah.
And the NBA writers tend to root, kind of vote on a story. Jokic is a great story that's gotten really no free pub. I mean, Denver is the best team in the league we never talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like, I think Jokic in the end, there's a sentiment right now. He deserves to be acknowledged finally as a top 20 player.
So when you talk about stories, Giannis, when he won last year, said, "I'm not the best player. It's LeBron." Do you think that hurt him?
I don't know. I just think we've fatigued. We've given it to him twice, and they haven't done anything in the postseason. So we've moved on. Not me, but I think the writers have moved on to a different story.
Makes sense.
Alex with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Well, I got to bring on my buddy Eric Mangini, Fox Sports NFL analyst. He lives in Cleveland. He actually does. And Baker Mayfield, they picked up his fifth-year option today, so he's going to join us live. They're probably, you know, in Cleveland, they're probably throwing a little bit of a parade about this. But it's, you know, to me, Lamar and Josh Allen, same class, are talking extension. This is a fifth-year option. It's kind of like, we like you, but we're not there yet. What do you make of it?
I think it's good business. I don't know why you need to rush to get the extension in place. One of the benefits of the fifth-year option is the fact that you can go through the full 4 years, see where the guy is, and then if you still want to take your time and figure it out, you get the fifth-year option, and look, it's an $18 million hit. It's not like he's not going to be compensated well for that year, but it's radically different than having to give him, you know, what, $140-plus million or whatever the number is going to be. And there's been a plenty of ups and downs with Baker Mayfield to say we need to see another year of production and growth and maturity before we're going to commit to this long term.
So there's a bunch of quarterbacks that are going to go in this draft. I thought the story this morning I read about Mac Jones, everybody's like, he's the smartest quarterback ever, 4-point, graduated early. And I'm like, the problem with being the smartest anything is generally smart people want to tell you how smart they are and show you how smart they are. And a lot of times they alienate, they're condescending. I've always had a feeling that, are you smart enough? Joe Montana was smart enough. Brady was smart enough. I don't know if they're good on Jeopardy, but they're smart enough. What do you make of the Mac Jones is smartest guy ever?
Well, you it's easy to fall in love with smart, especially from a coaching perspective, because you put so much time and effort and energy into finding the edges in a game plan. And to be a quarterback in the NFL, you've got to prepare at such a high level. And then the quarterbacks who are smart enough to then take advantage of those extra things, that can be the difference in a lot of games. And Brady, he was more than smart enough. He's really smart, and Peyton Manning is really smart. You know, but there's also another level of intelligence, which is understanding the room and understanding how you're impacting the people around you. And I think that Tom had a great emotional intelligence as well, which needs to come into this equation.
So Zach Wilson worries me. He wasn't very good against better competition in college. He had his best year against their weakest schedule. He's kind of slight. He's not big. He's a little bit of a ad libber. And by the way, the Jets have not, as you well know, not always surrounded their quarterback with the best ownership and, you know, blah, blah, blah. We know that. Zach worries me. Of all these guys, I think Trevor can overcome where he lands. I do think he's a little bit of a generational player. But, boy, the more I read on Zach Wilson, I think, boy, this thing could unravel fast in New York if he doesn't get protection and starts making stuff up as he goes with a rookie head coach. Your thoughts?
Yeah, all these guys have that potential, Colin. And when you look at Zach, he reminded me a lot of Baker Mayfield. You know, he isn't a big guy. They're similar size-wise. He moves around, but it's not like he's incredibly elusive. He makes some good plays on the run, similar to what Baker does. His arm strength is good. I wouldn't say it's, off the charts by any stretch. So there's a lot of comparisons when I look at him. I think of Baker. The importance of the support staff is huge. And when you do have a rookie head coach and you are in the division that you're in with the defensive challenges they're going to present, there's a lot of opportunities for some really rough times for a young guy. And you've got to support him with the running game. You've got to support him with things that can take pressure off him. And I know you talked about the New York market. I mean, I guess you experienced a different New York market than I did. I don't think it was that kind when I first got there. and the Boston market too. They did not love us at all when we got there. And at first with Bill and our crew. So there's going to be a ton of scrutiny and a huge market and a lot of pressure from the division to be successful and to deal with the challenges they create week in and week out.
I think
need
it's
some support.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting with Mac Jones. Most people say he's got the lowest ceiling, but he can win now. And, you know, it's interesting. When you're a head coach, and Kyle Shanahan clearly has some pull in the organization. When you're a head coach, Eric, you want to win now. You don't care about year 13. And do you ever remember, you know, I mean, just take me through that about, you know, Kyle's thinking, I've been here 4 years. I have one winning record. Like, I have to win games here. And I could get him thinking, I just don't want to develop Trey Lance. I don't want to go through 2 years of that. Is that something you guys talk about as coaches about, listen, we don't know what the guy's ceiling is, but he's ready to play right now.
Yeah, you want someone, look, in a perfect world, the guy comes in and he's ready to play right now and he's ready to play at a high level right now. But you've got to believe in your heart of hearts, especially based off what San Francisco did. I mean, they mortgaged a significant amount of their future for whoever this player is. You better believe not only that he can win right now and that he's better than the quarterback that you have, that he's better than Jimmy, but that he's going to continue to develop because of how intelligent he is. And he's going to be able to take the coaching that you have and get to a higher level. And the biggest fear I have with Mac Jones, Colin, we've talked about this, is he's in a pro team right now at Alabama. He's had a tremendous level of coaching. So, yeah, will his readiness be high? It should be. But But how close to the ceiling is he? I get that concern on your part.
Yeah. No, I mean, we've said this. There are certain places, you mentioned this, Ohio State, Alabama, those are like semi-NFL operations. It's not like you get a big ceiling with a lot of the guys you draft from those places. By the way, I want to go back to Brady, because you often talk about, you know, some guys are more coachable, some guys develop. Go back to Brady's first year. You're there. I mean, when did you no longer doubt him? Because wasn't he fourth on the depth chart for a while?
Colin, it was, everybody knows Tom now, and everybody thinks that Tom was what he was, but that wasn't the case at all. He was fourth on the depth chart. He had traits. That's what he had. And I won a lot of money from Brad Seeley in the post practice, where we would bet a dollar each on the routes that Tom would throw against my DBs, because I was coaching the DBs at the time. And I won a ton because Tom would just miss him. But he had a high character, he had a high work ethic, he had high intelligence, and we felt like he could continue to develop. But fast forward to the next year, we go to the Super Bowl and win the Super Bowl, but we only score three offensive touchdowns. And one of those touchdowns was from Drew Bledsoe. It's not like Tom lit it up when he played. So he continually got better. I don't know if he'd gone to another team, Colin, whether or not he would have survived at another team, whether or not he would have been cut, you know, from another team. Bill just had enough patience and experience and a track record of developing players that he was willing to make that commitment to a young quarterback.
When was he good enough that you wouldn't bet against him after practice?
I would say probably after the second Super Bowl. So we went through our own growth period as a team after winning the first Super Bowl, and you've talked about dealing with success. That's another part of growth in sports. We didn't deal with success very well and got knocked out of the playoffs the next year. But then we came back and went 14-2, and that's when you stopped betting against them. That's when you knew in the fourth quarter, as long as you had Tom, you had a chance if you just did what you needed to do.
Good stuff. Eric Mangini, have a great weekend. Try to avoid the traffic with the Baker Mayfield parade going on downtown Cleveland, Coach. Try to.
Yeah, it's going to be a big one. I'll be out there with my Baker Mayfield jersey on.
I appreciate it. Eric Mangini. Right, coming up next, the Oscars are Sunday. Some years are great for film. Some years are bad. Same with quarterback classes. There's been some stinkers, and there's been a great draft class. I think this is actually a really, really high-end draft class where you get so many different types of players. We'll give them each a movie poster. I think all these guys, there's a lot. This is a good year for quarterbacks. I don't know if it's a great year for movies. Nomadland's going to win, I think, and it's pretty bleak. We'll talk about that coming up.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb. The podcast is called All Ball. We usually talk all basketball all the time, but it's more about the stories about what made these people love their sport and all the interesting interactions along the way. We talk to coaches. We talk to players. We tell you stories. You download it, you listen to it, I think you'll like it. Listen to All Ball with Doug Gottlieb on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So we've had good years for movies back in 94, Shawshank Redemption, Forrest Gump, Pulp Fiction, same year. Oof. 2017, bad year, Shape of Water won. Weird. Same with quarterbacks. We've had 1983, you got Elway, Marino, and Jim Kelly. That's insane. Three Hall of Famers. And then we've had bad quarterback years. 2013, 2014 were rough. One year it was Bortles and Johnny Manziel. So this year, I think it's kind of a so-so year for movies, but I do think it's a really good year for quarterbacks. By the way, 2004, you got Eli, Big Ben, and Phillip Rivers.
So, wow.
Yeah, it's a great year. So it goes back and forth. Next year is supposed to be a really bad quarterback draft. This year you have just – you've got a prodigy, you've got great athletes, you got the smart guy, you got just a lot of experience and a lot of different kinds of quarterbacks. So to me, this feels like I do think three or four of these guys have a chance to hit. So let's go to the movie posters they would be. So Oscars are Friday. This is a good movie year. Trevor Lawrence, This was a pretty easy one for us. This was the first one we came up with. How about this? The natural.
So I mean,
the arm, the size, the personality, the demeanor, the hair. Like, he looks like a star quarterback. The maturity, he just got married. Mm-hmm. He's been in the spotlight for years. Never a problem. Yeah. Trevor Lawrence is the natural. You want to go to Zach Wilson? BYU, super talented. Wow factor. I know this is bad. The Titanic. The Jets have been an iceberg for a lot of people. There's a wow factor. Everybody's talking about it. Revolutionary arm. But they've drafted five quarterbacks. The last five, none have worked. One has worked ever. Joe Namath is the only first-round quarterback. There's talent. There's wow factor. There's buzz. But it worries me. How about Trey Lance is interesting. Unknown. People that have met him brag about him. Super smart. Huge, huge ceiling. We just don't know much about Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. Is the movie poster for Trey Lance Good Will Hunting? We didn't know who Damon was. We didn't know who Ben was. We didn't know anything. We hadn't really seen him in anything. And then 20 years later, they're legends. This is what they say about Trey Lance. People are saying that I trust his ceiling is no lower than Trevor Lawrence. Mature, big, capable. We just don't know enough about him yet. Now, Justin Fields is interesting. Justin Fields, remember when Robert Downey was cast in superhero movies? He had a checkered past. Nobody knew if he was family friendly. Is he a superhero? Everybody loves Robert Downey. Iron Man. The critics never love superhero movies, but if you ask Ohio State fans, they love him. If you ask fans in the media, they love him, but the critics don't love superhero movies. Justin Fields is Iron Man. I think he's going to be a hit. There's a Robert Downey quality where there's a lot of questions about this and that and this, but in the end, I think we're going to look up and go, yeah, it's a perfect fit. Of course that guy's a good NFL quarterback. Of course Robert Downey, snarky, handsome Robert Downey's a great actor. Of course he's a superhero. It looks so obvious now. Mm-hmm. Maybe it didn't then. And do we have our Mac Jones yet? We've been working on it. A beautiful mind. They say he's the smartest player of all time. Mac Jones, 4 point at Alabama, 3 years and graduated. I mean, it's becoming like stuff iconic and legendary. He sees things that others don't. It's the beautiful mind. So there you go.
Good work.
I only watched, I saw Chicago 7. I saw Nomadland. There's one more movie I'm supposed to watch. You know, it's not that the movies are bad. Bill Maher said this a couple of weeks ago. It's almost as if Hollywood now makes movies for themselves and not for us, mm-hmm. which I guess if you're an artist, if you are a true artist, you're not really doing it for consumerism Mm-mm. or commercialism. You're doing it for yourself. You're an artist. So the artist would say, yeah, I'm not doing it for the public. I'm doing it for me.
Well, indie movies became trendy. So now indie movies are kind of more mainstream.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's an artist.
I mean, does the artist have to care about the public, or is the art? That's the CEO of Paramount. That's the CEO of Disney. That's his job to care about consumerism. But the artist wants to just be the artist.
Yeah.
In fact, when John Mellencamp years ago did like a Chevy commercial or a Ford commercial, people just crushed him. They were like, how can you as an artist sing a jingle for like a car company? Now, of course, everybody does it.
You got to pay the bills.
Well, yeah, you know, somebody comes up to you. I mean, McConaughey's doing Lincoln Mercury.
Like, most people see him as Lincoln. He is Lincoln. Anytime a Lincoln drives by, I just hear his voice in the back of my head.
Good stuff. David Shaw, Stanford coach. He'll be on the draft coverage as well. Jason McIntyre will be joining us as we get ready for next week is... NFL is the biggest topic on every sports talk show host plate in the country. And then some people, I like NBA more than some. I like college football more than some. Some like baseball. The NFL draft next week, especially starting about Tuesday or Wednesday, it's become one of the biggest weeks of the year. People respond. Our ratings go up. Our podcasts go up. If we have a couple of big blockbuster moves next week, people are going to go crazy. I can't wait for it. Tuesday, Wednesday through the weekend is so much fun.